time to find balance and be refreshed here on Every Heart, Every Woman.
Every Heart, Every Woman.
Get ready for uplifting music and inspiring interviews.
Every Heart, Every Woman.
Let's get motivated to move forward as we share our life experiences. Host, Harla Nivens.
Welcome to the show, everyone. My name is Carla Nivens. I am your host for the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show, and we're going to have a great conversation today. But before we get into that, let's set the tone with a little bit of live music. This is Deliverer by Douglas File. Sit back and enjoy.
Bless the Lord at all times, and His praises shall be in my mouth. For I sought the Lord, and He heard my cry. He delivered me from all of my fears.
Oh,
the righteous man,
they are many troubles.
Well, welcome back to the show, everyone. My name is Carla Nivens. I am your host for the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show. And I have my good friend, Vicki McMurray, co-hosting with me today. Hey, Vicki.
Hey, Carla.
Y'all, our radio show is a program of Love Ministries, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. You can find out more information about Love Ministries from their website. Go to loveministriesbuilds.org and you'll get all the great information about Love Ministries and in all of our programs and everything that we do. Well, we are excited to welcome our guest today. Our guest is Hillary Owen, and Hillary is like an old friend of ours. We haven't seen her in a while.
No.
So it's been a great what do you call that? Reunion?
Yes.
It's been a great reunion. Hillary is a children's program manager at New Friends, New Life. She has also fostered children in her home. She's an artist, and she's about to be a mom. Her and her husband, Regan, are about to have a baby.
Yes.
Hey, Hillary.
Hello. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here.
Well, we
have a lot that we want to cover. So should we just dive right in?
Yeah,
let's do it.
It's so fun to have Hillary here. It'll be fun to hear about this job. And I thought you'd been at it longer than you had. So we're ready to hear all about it. Tell us what you do at New Friends, New Life.
Sure. So my title at New Friends, New Life, as you said, is the Children's Program Manager, which is somewhat misleading. So I'm a licensed master of social work. Mm-hmm. So I do practice as a therapist on staff. I see any child that we see, and at New Friends, New Life, that means it's a child of the mom who's who's been trafficked or exploited.
Okay.
I also see some adults as well. And then that program manager aspect of my job is managing all of the other things besides therapy that we do for our clients, particularly our clients who are minors. So that includes safe childcare, which, as y'all know, is such a huge thing, especially for women in poverty and single women in poverty, which is most of our clients. Also things like making sure basic needs are covered, helping make referrals for other resources that might be available, and helping empower moms to advocate for their kids in other arenas. So how to talk to your teacher, how to advocate in school, how to advocate for their health and mental health needs outside of that setting. So it's a little bit of a lot, but it's also really, it's fun because I get to see a lot of different elements of the agency. And as a social worker, the field is so broad. So what's really cool about having that license is that you can do social work in so many different ways. And I feel like in this position specifically, I really get to sort of like hone my social worker skills, which has been fun.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I love that. Well, I have to roll back a little bit. I understand what you do, but I know nothing about human trafficking. And it's unfathomable to me to begin with.
Yeah.
And I was reading a little bit on your website before we had you on that Texas is number 2.
I think that's right.
In the country for most people trafficked.
Really?
Which is scary. And I live an hour outside of Dallas now. And I was talking with our pastor's wife the other day about that we were going to talk to you and what you did. And she said, we deal with some of that in commerce. And some kids that she knows of at the high school that have had this experience, and it just scares the bejeebies out of me.
Yeah.
So, and we're talking, you know, it could be anybody.
It could. Yeah.
And that I want to understand that. So help us, kind of give us a glimmer of how this.
Yeah, well, so human trafficking is such a complex issue because, it, like you said, it can happen to anyone. And so we have clients who come from pretty privileged backgrounds in every sense of that word. And then we have many clients who have a lifetime of trauma, a lifetime of poverty, and then anything sort of in between. So it looks different for each client. I will tell you that most people, when they think of human trafficking, they think of like Taken. A girl goes and gets stolen or, you know, kind of tricked.
That's the only thing I have in my mind.
So I will tell you, I mean, with maybe a few anecdotal exceptions, that is just not the case. That's not what we see at our agency. It certainly can happen and does happen, but is not the primary entry point. There's a lot of data that shows correlations with human trafficking. So a couple of the things that we look at when we think of risk factors, especially for teens, which is the average age that a woman enters into exploitation or trafficked as while she's still a minor, which is really unfortunate. Mm-hmm. I believe that the statistic is that 60% of women who have been trafficked have a history in the foster care system. So,
interesting.
Yeah, because when you think about why someone might end up in this place, there's a history of trauma. There's also, mm-hmm. I can't remember the exact statistic, but I want to say it's like in the high 80% mm-hmm. of women who have been trafficked had a history of childhood sexual abuse. Mm. So, for a woman who maybe as a young child was sexually abused and then was removed from her home or placed with a family member or even sort of informally placed with a family member. Mm-hmm. So maybe should have been under the care of the state, but wasn't right. for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And then becomes a teenager. Maybe there is some addiction or some substance use in the home. Typically there's domestic violence in the home as well. Mm-hmm. And so the home becomes unsafe. And so she might start looking for attachment or security or yes. friendship or belonging mm-hmm. outside of the home. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the way that she might find her way into trafficking or exploitation at first doesn't look like that at all. So it looks like he's my boyfriend or mm-hmm. he's my daddy. Like he might actually mm-hmm. have her call him daddy, mm-hmm. Take care of her basic needs, mm-hmm. maybe even take care of her so well that it's nothing she's ever experienced before.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then over time, you know, it's kind of that analogy of like the frog in boiling water. Over mm-hmm. time, it's like, well, I'll give you these things, but I need you to go and work for me. I need you to go and spend time with this client. And then it's, well, I need you to produce $500 in an evening, or I need to produce thousands of dollars in an evening, depending on how,
wow.
how, you know, I guess how much she's worth as far as that goes.
Right.
And then from there, she might become addicted to a substance where that's a factor in mm-hmm. leaving. Mm-hmm. She might really love him. You know, mm-hmm. that might be somebody who, while he's super unhealthy and dangerous, it is the only person who's ever shown her belonging and ever taken care of her mm-hmm. in, you know, her life. And she might have, you know, a ninth grade education.
Right, I was so going to ask where we are with education with this.
The
yes.
prospects of what she's going to do after that mm-hmm. can be really complicated. Mm-hmm. She might also have a criminal background at this point because mm-hmm. prostitution is illegal in the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. So if she's been arrested for possession or prostitution or anything sort of in that, you know, of stealing, anything, mm-hmm. anything like that, that'll make it more difficult for her to get a job. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, sometimes if you think about people who've experienced a lifetime of complex trauma, mm-hmm. That can present itself in ways that are not super functional in everyday mm-hmm. living.
Right.
So they might be lacking in skills to manage conflict mm-hmm. or may have never been in a situation where they had to show up on time for something before, have never been shown what it means to dress professionally or mm-hmm. appropriately. Mm-hmm. And so managing what we would consider sort of a conventional job is a really difficult thing, and no one has provided those skills or resources to be able to do that. So it's super, super difficult to leave. Mm-hmm. And so then the goal comes from, well, if I need to leave this environment, where can I go from here? And so it might be, well, I'm going to go to a different environment where I have more control over the money I make, or I can make more money, or I'm going to leave street prostitution and go to the clubs because at least that's, you know, to some degree regulated and right. public. So then it just sort of spirals from there. And that's why, you know, even when we see women who come in on our adults, so we have two sides at New Friends, New Life. We serve, we have a youth resource center, which is a drop-in center for girls ages 12 through 24. And then we have our women's program, which serves women who are 24 and older.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so on our women's program side, we actually, I don't know the exact number, but I would anecdotally say that our average age is probably 40s or 50s, so like fairly
wow
yeah older than what you would expect, right? But when we ask them what age did you enter trafficking or exploitation, mm-hmm. typically it's when I was 15, when I was 17.
Well, you just said 16. 12. Like, I didn't want to stop you while you were talking, but yeah. you said we have a program for 12 to mm-hmm.
12 to 24 is the
I just went whoa 12.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just heartbreaking and shocking to me.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And then I am surprised at the, I mean, I'm 53.
Right.
That I can see, I've been a single parent before. And mm-hmm. so I could see, I was blessed. I had a college education. I had a good job. I could take care of the bills. But I could see where you could get to a place mm-hmm. where you feel stuck or trapped and mm-hmm. I just need to make a few extra dollars. Mm-hmm. And you go to a place, like you get to a spot in your life where you're making mm-hmm. choices like that.
And I would actually say that for most women that it's not even that they even ever had the choice to do that.
Okay.
That the coercion,
right.
The exploitation happened at such a young age.
Manipulation, right.
That
it's a part of life.
Yeah, it's a part of life. And like there really isn't a better option. I mean, even when they come to us, you know, the way that the world is set up is pretty oppressive to, you know, women who are primarily women of color, primarily women who are in poverty, mm-hmm. primarily single moms. Mm-hmm. You know, who have a lifetime of trauma and therefore have a major mental health diagnosis most of the time.
Right.
And like we know, I mean, there's just not that many resources and have a criminal background. Mm-hmm. So if you're 50, you don't have a high school education, mm-hmm. you're a woman of color, mm-hmm. you're addicted to a hardcore narcotic substance, you have a major mental health diagnosis. You've never worked in a legal job in your life.
Right.
You know, there's a lot stacked against you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Much more than just what I was saying, mm-hmm. of course.
But certainly sometimes that does happen.
Right. Yeah. So what led me to think about what you just said was if I'm one of these women, am I somebody who's just been arrested and I'm like, all right, I need help. Can you please, where can I go? I can't do this anymore. Or is it they might have trusted someone just enough to share a little bit about themselves and that person knew about new friends, new life? Or mm-hmm. how does that work?
Yeah. So I would say that there are really two primary ways that we get referrals. You just mentioned both of them.
Okay.
so one of them is through the court system. Mm-hmm. So there are actually specific programs in Dallas County that they're diversion programs. So if a woman fits certain criteria, she can go through this program and then she can, is never mandated, mm-hmm. so they're never required by the court to come to us, but they might encourage her to do that. So that's one way we get referrals. The other way is by word of mouth, and it's typically not word of mouth from like a person who hasn't been trafficked to a person who's been trafficked. It's victim to victim. So,
oh, interesting. Okay.
We hear a lot from many of our women live in shelters. So mm-hmm. a lot of it is I met somebody at my housing program. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised how many calls I get where they say I was just talking to this lady on the bus and she told me, you know, whatnot.
Praise God.
So, yeah. Yeah. So it's a lot of like word of mouth from people who are already in the program mm-hmm. to other women.
And I was thinking that means that the program is working if people are sharing it. Meeting somebody on the bus, I would imagine that that's huge.
Yeah, so one of the things that New Friends, New Life offers that is, you know, there really aren't very many best practices in the field of human trafficking mm-hmm. because it's a fairly new issue mm-hmm. in as far as like awareness and, you know, serving women who have experienced it. But one of the things that is becoming a best practice is providing financial incentives and like real life resources so that when you think about all those things that are stacked up against a woman, mm-hmm. it makes it practical for them to actually be able to leave mm-hmm. and kind of start over.
Right.
So one of the things that New Friends, New Life offers is that for the first 12 weeks, we actually offer women up to $100 a week to participate in our services.
Oh.
Okay.
So we require that, or participating in our full program means that you come to counseling once a week, which can be group or individual. You're doing case management once a week, which means that you're meeting with someone who can help you figure out resources for your basic needs. And then you're meeting with an economic empowerment coach, which is somebody who's helping you figure out your finances and create a career plan for yourself.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just huge. That's huge.
In the first 3 months, they can earn up to $1,200 just for showing up and participating.
Okay.
And then during that time, but then also after those 12 months are over, we offer a benchmark program, which is financial incentives for meeting certain life goals. And there are four categories: education, economic empowerment, which is like saving, financial goals and career coaching. Mm-hmm. Financial separate, and then there's career, and then you actually get incentivized for moving through the program. So our program is designed in phases. So when you move from phase one to phase two,
there's an incentive for
an incentive for that, and we throw a massive party and celebrate you like it's going to be the best day of your entire life. So, yeah. So we really want to make it not to where you rely on the agency, because that's not really the goal, but so that it's a commitment. I mean, to show up for mm-hmm. 3 hours a week, 4 hours a week sometimes to services, and to do this hard work of starting over in a lot of senses of the words, but also sort of facing your trauma. Mm-hmm. We want to reward you for that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So when you get somebody who comes in via however they hear about it, whether mm-hmm. it's, you might not always get somebody who's super willing. You might get somebody the court saying and they're like, well, nothing else is work. I guess I'll try this. Or do you usually get people that are like, this is it. I'm at rock bottom. I got nothing mm-hmm. else.
I would say that the majority of our women are coming to us with a desire to commit to the program. Good. Because like okay. I said, we're not a court mandated service. Okay. So occasionally we'll have women who are kind of like, so-and-so said that I needed to come. Mm-hmm. But when you sort of start talking to them, they might initially feel that way, but there is a desire there to do right. the mm-hmm. work. Okay. Or else they wouldn't. The ones that there isn't a real desire over time, they
weed
fizzle
themselves.
Out.
Yeah. Okay.
I would think, and I'm glad that we're doing this show, mm-hmm. and kudos to Vicky. I mean, she was like, no, we need
thanks.
To do this.
Because
this is kind of like, it's honestly, I'm sitting here hearing you talking, and a lot of this is like new information for me. I feel like yeah. I'm out of the loop in all of this.
Yeah.
But it could be somebody you know, Naomi goes to school with.
That's
it could
what
be somebody
I'm thinking.
Marley's
I was
in
like,
college
this could
with.
Be mm-hmm. everybody. Yes. This could be any woman that I know, mm-hmm. and I need to know this information, and mm-hmm. I need to make sure that even I know what New Friends, New Life does so that I can be, you know, an advocate.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really feel like we need to sound the alarm. And so how, for somebody like me, like mm-hmm. I'm hearing this for the first time, what should I do to spread the word and to be knowledgeable and ready to let people know what's going on?
Gosh, I mean, I feel like there's so many different ways. I think as far as awareness of the issue and the resources that are available, I'm thinking of the two of you specifically and kind of where you have influence. And I know, Carla, you have influence from like the community mm-hmm. advocacy perspective, but mm-hmm. also in schools. Mm-hmm. And I happen to know that the schools you have influence over, we get quite a few referrals from.
Okay.
So I think in that arena, it's education on what the risk factors are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of people don't know that having a history of being in the foster care system or being, you know, under CPS watch of some sort, having a history of runaway of any type,
that
having a history
sense.
Of childhood sexual yeah, abuse or domestic
sense.
Violence. I mean, really, if you're looking at two or three or more of those, you're considered high risk for trafficking okay. and exploitation. Because if
that's
you think about
know.
It, you're just one step away. I think there's a statistic right now that says that it, if a girl runs away, that within 72 hours, she will be picked up for mm-hmm. trafficking and exploit. Like, that's the mm-hmm. average. Mm-hmm. So, I would see, like, having awareness and spreading awareness, mm-hmm. especially in those like formal mm-hmm. ways, because we do. Dallas County is lucky that we have resources from the CPS and law enforcement mm-hmm. level to mm-hmm. keep an eye on some of these kiddos mm-hmm. that are high risk. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I would say. And then I think in sort of a similar vein, but like at the college and community mm-hmm. levels, which is sort of like a step back from that. Mm-hmm. Again, just recognizing what are those signs mm-hmm. to help. You know, places that see women a
right.
lot
mm-hmm.
naturally
mm-hmm. right.
to say like, hey, I'm just worried about this woman. Mm-hmm. And I just want to make sure that, I mean, obviously we can't make, especially an adult woman, do anything
right.
or change anything, but just to be aware that like,
right.
I'm worried about her.
Right. Right.
This scares me for her.
Right.
Just very quickly, because I know we need to wrap up for this half of the show, but the other day I was driving behind my bank, and there is a nasty little motel that's right behind mm-hmm. it, and there was a young girl, and it was school mm-hmm. that day, the school. She looked mm-hmm. like she was a high schooler, and she was all curled up. Mm-hmm. And this is not my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. I was going behind there to go to the ATM, and I drove and got my cash, and I was like, Vicky, you have got to go talk to her. You mm-hmm. have to. Mm-hmm. And so I called my friend. I'm like, God's telling me to go talk to her, but I'm so uncomfortable, because I was the first thing I thought of, because she was right there by this nasty hotel mm-hmm. was that was what was happening. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't even begin to know what to do, Hillary, but I just felt like I needed to just let her know I'm okay. Can I get you something to eat? It's like 30 something degrees out. So I did approach her and I talked to her, and she wouldn't accept anything from me. She couldn't have looked more than 16. Mm-hmm. And you know, I just wanted to snatch her up and put her in my car and
right.
drive her out here to you guys, or
right.
we have a shelter in Greenville. But, you know, when we come back, I kind of want to talk a little bit about that. You know, are there certain things I could say, or, mm-hmm. I, you know, I'm not a social worker, but mm-hmm. I don't know. I just,
but you're a mom.
Yeah, it's our
responsibility. So let's take a break. Let's press the pause button. When we come back, we'll start right there. That's a great place to start. We'll be right back.
Every heart, every woman. Every heart, every woman.
You're listening to Every Heart, Every Woman, the show where women find balance, peace, and inspiration.
Every heart,
now let's get
every
back to the
woman.
Show with your host, Carla Nivens.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show. I am Carla Nivens. I am your host, and I have my good friend Vicki McMurray co-hosting with me today. And we are, our minds are being blown by our guest today, Hillary Owen from New Friends, New Life. Thank you so much, Hillary, for being here.
Thanks
for your time, and thanks for educating us.
Yes.
Because we need it.
Yes.
And so before we left on the break, Vicki was sharing about a young woman mm-hmm. that was at a hotel, a sketchy hotel, mm-hmm. and it was early in the morning, right?
Mm-hmm.
So early in the morning. And so we were just talking about if you... Obviously, we're women, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the biggest thing is we're moms.
Mm-hmm.
And so... We're
going to
pick up on danger,
mm-hmm.
and we
mm-hmm.
want to nurture people and take care, mm-hmm. especially young,
girls.
You know, teenage
mm-hmm.
women.
Yep.
And so, you know, what would you do? What do we do in that circumstance?
Well, I think there's a lot of different angles to talk about this.
Right.
So I would say, you know, the first thing I'll say is that if it does appear that she's a minor, that's a safety concern. In the state of Texas, we're all mandated reporters for Child
mm-hmm.
Protective
mm-hmm.
Services, meaning
mm-hmm.
if we're concerned about a child who's experiencing abuse or neglect, we have an obligation to report that.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously don't know if this young woman was a child or not.
Right.
But I think calling the police and having them do a well check just to say, like, hey, I'm worried about this. She looks like she might be a minor. I'm worried about her safety, wondering why she's not in school at this hour type of thing it's never a bad idea. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
mean that always pans out well.
Right.
You know, there's some amazing police officers. I know in Dallas County, we're lucky to have some really incredible
mm-hmm.
officers
we
and
are.
Units that work on the trafficking task force. And yet we do still hear stories from every county of officers that engage in perpetration of trafficking and
mm-hmm.
sexual assault. So, you know, but we don't have control over that.
Right.
So
right,
we
right,
have
right.
to, and to some degree, you know, trust the system a little
mm-hmm.
bit there. So I think that's one angle. You know, I think it's hard, especially when we're truly worried about someone's safety and they're not ready yet to make that step for themselves
mm-hmm.
to sort of say, okay, I've done all I can do here. So what I love about what you did say to her is that you did say you were worried about her, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, I love that statement because it's not controlling. It
mm-hmm.
doesn't put pressure on her, but it just says like, hey, something about this makes me feel worried for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want you to know, which can be really validating because, you know, she may not be worried about herself or may not have ever had anybody who has worried about her before. So I love that statement. We use that statement all the time.
Good.
Like when I hear you say this, it makes me really worried
mm-hmm.
for you.
Mm-hmm.
We also, though, use this model called the stages of change model, where we really say that, you know, anyone, whether it be, you know, a woman in trafficking or you, if you're trying to change your diet or, you know, something
mm-hmm.
silly versus
mm-hmm.
something really, really extreme, you're only going to work as hard as you're ready to work,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's the pre-contemplative stage, which is I'm not really sure that there needs to be change here. There's
mm-hmm.
the contemplative change stage, which is I'm aware that something's wrong and I'm thinking about whether or not I want to do something about it. There's the preparation phase, which is I know something is off here. I know
mm-hmm.
there needs to be change and I'm working towards doing that. There's the action stage, which is I'm actively working to change it. And then there's the maintenance, which is I'm continuing to do the things that have changed things for the better. So when you interact with someone and they say, I'm okay, there is a recognition that, like, number one, she just might not be ready.
Right.
And if she's not ready, then that's okay. We have to
mm-hmm.
honor that. But then there's also an even more important issue, which is her safety.
Mm-hmm.
So most women that I've met are incredibly brilliant when it mm-hmm. comes to learning how to keep themselves safe and learning how to survive
wow.
horrific incidents that mm-hmm. have happened to them. And sometimes keeping yourself safe looks really awful to those of us who haven't been through what mm-hmm. someone has been through before. So it might seem like things that are completely contradictory to what our conscience is saying do. Like mm-hmm. maybe for this young girl, you're like, get out, get out, get out, get mm-hmm. in my car. That might be the very thing that could get her killed, mm-hmm. you know, or mm-hmm. the very thing that could get her, you know, hurt or assaulted really badly later. And so to some degree, we do have to trust that she's the expert on her situation.
Right. Mm-hmm. Good point.
And she knows more about it than we do. Mm-hmm. And if she says she's okay, then we can do what we can, especially if it's a minor, because minors don't, we all, you know, we all know minors don't always know when they're mm-hmm. actually
right.
okay.
Right.
But to some degree to say like, okay, well, you get to decide what happens in your life and right. I don't get to decide that for you.
Right. And I don't think I said it on the air. I did end up calling the non-emergency number of our police department to have them do a well check on her. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea what happened, but I did drive by a couple times after I approached her just to see if she was still there. And when she was still there and it was super cold that day, it was about 3 weeks ago, I went ahead and called so they could do a well check. So,
yeah.
Well, that's good. Thank you. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know what to say in a situation
yeah.
like that.
Most of us don't. Yeah.
Probably more scared than she was that some sure. strange lady was approaching. Mm-hmm. But one other thing, too, is what you said off air earlier was that if she is talking to me for a long time, maybe she's being watched and my safety could mm-hmm. be an issue. So
yeah.
I
mm-hmm.
didn't even think about that at all. I mm-hmm. thought, oh, I'm just in my hometown, my little mm-hmm. town here. And mm-hmm. so that's good to know.
Yeah, definitely.
That's great information. Yeah.
So, Hillary, we know that you fostered before.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Tell us about that experience. Maybe some women who are listening are thinking about it or, mm-hmm. or wanting to know how that experience might go for them.
Yeah. So we became licensed foster parents in October 2017. We actually started getting calls for place. We live in Dallas County. Dallas County has notoriously a really a high volume
mm-hmm.
of kids who are in care and who are needing emergency placement. And it's such a big system that it can be cumbersome to navigate. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of foster parents choose to go to other counties, especially if they don't live in Dallas County. So
mm-hmm.
there is a shortage in Dallas County of emergency care placements. We actually started getting calls for placements before we even knew we were licensed.
Oh, wow.
Which was...
Surprise!
Yeah. So we had one long-term placement who was in our home for about 11 months. And then we found out we were pregnant towards the end of that placement. And our agency, which is consistent with all placing agencies, doesn't allow you to take placements while you're pregnant. So we have had to kind of push pause on that for right now.
Okay.
But, is that for safety reasons?
I don't really know honestly.
I know. I was like, what?
I take a little bit of issue with it
yeah,
if I'm being really
yeah,
honest.
Because you had a little one. It's not like you had a teenager
did,
in
right.
the house.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, I get it. It's for attachment reasons.
Oh, okay.
And like most of the kind of weird rules that placing agencies have are because something bad happened mm-hmm. when they allowed it. So I mm-hmm. assume that there are really good reasons why.
I thought they were mm-hmm. going to be a big brother or sister. Or
yeah,
they
I mean,
were
there and there are like tough. The stereotypes as far as like people who do foster care for the wrong reasons and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And so I could see how it could go wrong.
Yes.
Certainly.
Yes.
But, you know, whatever.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
If you weren't doing
wasn't
it gonna wrong,
go wrong,
you were
in
loving
your case.
On your little thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah. So it's... It's by far the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life.
Really?
By far. And
why would you say it's the hardest thing? You're about to be a mom. Girl, you haven't hit the hardest thing.
Well, because I'm thinking you
yeah.
also worked in
I've
missions.
I've done a lot of
yeah,
hard things.
You've
yeah,
done some,
say, you've done
been in some
ministry.
Very hard situations in missions.
I
so
oh,
I hear you
true.
Say that this
yes.
is the hardest
yes.
thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I've done some really hard things professionally, and I've been through some really hard things personally,
yes.
and I can honestly say that this is
aww.
The most difficult. Well, and difficult is not even, I mean, I guess it's the right word, but, you know, I think CPS does so many things well, and nobody who goes into CPS as a caseworker does it if they don't love
right.
kids. Like,
right.
you would never sign up for that job
right.
if
right.
you didn't love kids. So I want to say that first and foremost. And it is so underfunded, mm-hmm. and they're so overworked, mm-hmm. and the laws are so outdated. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the decisions made on behalf of kids are made by people who never actually meet the kids. Mm-hmm. So the judges mm-hmm. are really the ones who make the decisions, and judges often literally never see kids. So right.
The system is flawed.
Yeah, the system is so flawed. And so to be in the thick of it and to see just the way that just the trauma of being affected by the system affects mm-hmm. these kids from the outset, right? Mm-hmm. Like from the removal. Like removal is so traumatic. Mm-hmm. No matter what is happening in the home, it doesn't matter how dangerous it is.
Right.
Like,
it's their family.
It's their mom. I mean, that's right. their mom. That's their dad, you know, right. their family or whatever. So the fact that you're severing that connection first and foremost is so horrible. And to just sort of sit in that, and then to just be in the trenches with it and see what that looks like day in and day out. I mean, the struggles of having that type of trauma, mm-hmm. especially for like really, really young kids. And then, you know, the system does do some things for parents, but in a lot of ways doesn't do a great job of supporting parents in trying to kind of get back on track to get their kids.
I wondered about that.
Yeah. So the system is very biased towards reunification, as it should be, mm-hmm. You know. That's a big deal to remove someone's right to be a parent.
Right.
So, you know, I don't stand in opposition to that bias by any means. And at the same time, I think that because of all those reasons that I've mentioned, a lot of times you see parents who do what is expected of them as far as kind of checking boxes. But then at the end of the day, has there really been change that's happened? And, you know, we look at these foster care statistics, and I think it's been so interesting for me to sit on this foster care side personally and then this professional side that's so connected to foster mm-hmm. care yes. and mm-hmm. to see how the outcomes just aren't good
right
now. You mm-hmm. know, for the most part, having involvement in the foster care system does not fare well for you mm-hmm. long term. Certainly there are exceptions. And so just to sort of watch that and recognize that unless there's significant change, that trajectory is moving generally in the same mm-hmm. direction. And then to like, I mean, that's all sort of theoretical and systemic the way I'm talking about it. But mm-hmm. then like you actually have a face to that.
Right.
And like that's a the human experience. Being that you love mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. you care for. Mm-hmm. And not only do you care for that child, but you also see you learn to love and care for their parents and their grandparents and their, mm-hmm. you know, their family mm-hmm. who most of the time has also been profoundly impacted yes. by foster right. care as well. So it just becomes so personal in that way. And then not to mention just like the logistical nightmare of being a foster parent, mm-hmm. you know, like there's weekly visits that you have to get the child to.
Makes
so
sense.
Yeah. So like, you know, you think about being a parent's hard. The child has trauma. So that adds, you know, behavioral and, you know, just a different set of circumstances in a lot of ways, like kind of being a parent of a child with special needs does. Mm-hmm.
Is it called, if I remember correctly, reactive disorder? Like where they push you away? Is that a right?
There is a diagnosis of reactive attachment disorder.
That's what it is,
some kids that does exist.
Okay.
That's extreme. An extreme form of like attachment.
I can
attachment.
Just see kids pushing away because you are showing all these things they've never experienced. Possibly.
Mm. Yeah, there's different forms.
Security,
yeah.
safety.
Yeah.
Food.
Yeah.
Nurse. You
yeah.
know, all the things.
Yeah. So, I mean, the attachment thing is the biggest part of it. So, there's every kid in foster care has an attachment disruption of some sort
yes.
because they've been removed from their
yes.
home, mm-hmm. you know, regardless of how healthy that home was.
So, mm-hmm. and your person you had was young.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to build rapport. You have to build trust.
Mm-hmm.
You're running them around to these appointments.
Mm-hmm. yes.
And then they're going to have their moments where they have their meltdowns, which might not make a lick of sense,
yeah,
even
mm-hmm.
as a social worker.
Yeah.
You know, trained to deal with it.
And they're also kids. So, like, they're just generally can be, you know, mm-hmm. annoying
being a kid, yeah.
sometimes. yeah. They're lovely in so many ways, mm-hmm. but they're still kids.
Yes.
So. mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. And so I did ask you off the air earlier. It just was hard when that sweet person left, just because.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is the dilemma of being a foster parent is that, you know, when you sign up for it, that's like the majority of the time that is what happened is, mm-hmm. is the kid does go somewhere else at the end of the stay. So we knew that and signed up for
sure.
it. And we championed that, you know, like you really should not go into foster care if you're not supportive of families staying together mm-hmm. and being reunified, because that is the goal of foster care.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so as much as we were cheering for that success, you know, there is a personal element of like, I mean, you just fall in love with mm-hmm. these right. kids, and
you, I don't see how you could help
but not yeah. fall in love with them. Right? And yeah. then you don't get to have any, because you cut it off and you don't ever get to talk or see that person again.
In most cases, once a child leaves your home, you don't talk to them right. or you don't see or
because they need to be
them.
Successful in their home.
Yeah, yeah. So there are some cases where if foster parents are able to build a positive relationship with the family, that the family, and the family really is in charge of that and decides what happens. The family mm-hmm. might choose to continue to engage mm-hmm. in a relationship, or there are some unique situations where, you know, it's kind of like aunties and uncles
yes.
and, you know, that sort
mm-hmm.
of thing,
yes.
which is, I think that to me is an example of everything really, really being successful.
Right.
But it is rare because we're human and mm-hmm. it's so messy. Mm-hmm. And to be in that dynamic with so many different things going on and to try to create, you know, a positive, healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's hard when you're co-parenting with someone you at once were in love with. Right.
Right. Right.
And like, you're co-parenting with someone you have never met before.
Right.
And you may or may not have ever crossed paths with otherwise.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Probably come from totally different, you know,
backgrounds
mm-hmm. and ever since the word.
Experiences.
And may or may not have anything in common. And so right. then you're trying to figure out, like, how do we do this?
How do we love this yeah. child together?
Yeah. Yes. How do we be on the same team about this?
I know.
So it's
wow.
just messy. Yeah.
It is. Wow,
so
how lucky.
Are you, but you're glad you did it?
Yes.
Yeah.
You're glad you did it. And you... And you yeah. recommend?
Well, I mean, I recommend as a, yeah, I think I'm just really honest about it. Mm-hmm. I would say, like, in some ways it really wrecked us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, there's some of that I think is like really good. And I would even say like holy, like there's something about truly just being like having to look injustice in the eye and just sort of sit with it and mm-hmm. say like, I have no control over this.
Mm-hmm.
That is like a, I think sort of a holy experience.
Right.
And I think to do that with a partner, I mean, it was, like I said, it was super hard, but I think in so many ways, it's such a profound shared experience that
mm-hmm.
we have now.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, both as an individual and as a couple, it can go the other way very
mm-hmm.
easily.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a number of reasons, you know, the grief, the stress of it,
mm-hmm.
the lack of control,
mm-hmm.
just the unknown. I mean, and we actually, I mean, as much as it was a roller coaster, we had periods of time where we knew like this is going to be the case for 6 weeks or 8 weeks or whatever. But really the way foster care is like you get a call at 9 a.m. and a kid can leave at noon. I mean, that's how...
Okay.
unknown it
wow.
can be. And I mean, that's how the kid gets placed with you. Like
mm-hmm.
we got a call at 1 o'clock and child was in our home at 4 o'clock.
Hmm.
So, I mean, that's how rapid things move.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to really be that. I mean, like I said, you can lean into that and there's ways that can really grow and stretch you. And in some ways it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also really hard too. So do I recommend it? If you're ready for that,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and I really do say
statement.
That.
Yeah,
you
that's
know?
An honest statement.
But
yeah.
I think there's a lot of like, especially with adoption, but even with foster care, there's a lot of like romanticizing of it.
Yes.
Like,
mm-hmm.
You know, oh, you're such good people. And like, this is so cool what you're doing for this child. And if there's any of that in you that's driving you, I would really work to face that before I signed up for
mm-hmm.
it, because it's just not like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll set you up to have a lot of resentment.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I've heard more of that. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I've listened mm-hmm. to a few people sharing on podcasts about their experiences with fostering. And it feels like almost all of them sort of lean towards, I'm bitter about how it all worked out in the end, or how I felt yanked around,
mm-hmm.
or I wasn't prepared for the trauma the child had. So I do think your heart has to be in the right place, and you need to be knowledgeable about,
mm-hmm.
you know, how the system works. And
how the system works, and I think to your point about how parenting looks different
mm-hmm.
in this scenario than it does
with a
a child who hasn't experienced significant trauma at a young age. And that is just a fact. So so many people go into it and don't realize that and then are sort of blindsided by that.
Are there some things because of this experience, because you and Regan are going to have a baby now, which is, we're so excited about.
Yes.
Are there some things that you both would do differently because you went through that experience?
Question.
Did it just, has it like just changed the way you go into becoming a mother?
I think it has. I mean, it's hard to know because I don't have anything to compare it to.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, I think it's made me a lot more flexible. So I've noticed like a lot of my friends right now are pregnant or just, you know, about like have just had babies or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed, especially for first time moms, you know, like there's that natural excitement. I'm going to like control everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, I, like we just had to learn that ultimately you have zero control over your kids. And what happens to, I mean, you can do your the best you can to set them up for success. And then at the end of the day, like what happens happens to some degree. So I feel like I'm a lot more laid back about it than probably I would be had I just gone straight into this, you know, guy
getting
pregnant.
I think that's a great bit of wisdom that you know about yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you cannot control.
You can't.
No.
You can't.
At any age. Because you've worked with them older.
Yeah. So I think that's one thing. You know, like I said, there you parent children who, or it is advised that you parent children who've experienced trauma in a different, or in a adjusted way than you would a child who hasn't experienced trauma. But I actually believe that the way, and it's called connected parenting, is a way more effective way to parent. And I feel like we, you know, if I can be so bold, I feel like we were pretty good at that. And so I think that that has been a really cool element, is that we had to do so much preparation in order to become parents that most people don't do. And so I think that has been kind of a cool blessing of this whole thing. And then this is a small one, but you know, with foster care, you're not allowed to share much personal information about the kids in your home. So you can't post their faces on social media. You're not really supposed to tell about their stories to other people. And I think especially for people my age, I'm a millennial, and there's sort of this like thing where you just share everything about your kids on social media. And so it has really kind of put for us into check, like what's appropriate to put for the public and what's intimate. And I think that has really changed our perspective, which no judgment, people can do whatever they want to. But for us personally, I think we will approach what we share about our kids, particularly on the internet, but even just like in
I'm not going to see a cool settings. Instagram picture of that sweet little boy.
I don't know yet. If we, well, I mean, we'll see.
You know, I honestly, I feel the same.
Yeah.
And I know that Roosevelt and I, and even you and Tim, like we're in a, you know, different type of situation.
Yes.
But we kind of have made the decision that our social media is going to be more about join us in the work that God has called us to do. Like this is, this is, you know, something that the Lord has allowed us to do. You know, here's how you can get involved. And we pretty much try to keep family stuff, stuff. But you can text me at any time. Like my friends, you know, when we went on vacation, my friend told me from college, I know you're not going to post anything. When you get back, will you please send me pictures?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm happy
I
to
love
do that.
That.
I'm so happy to do that. And I sent her all the stuff and, you know, she was like overjoyed. But I just, I don't know. I feel just differently about social media and I don't want to, you know, but I still want to know. So I'm going to be texting.
Well, and I think, I mean, we still did share about when we had a child in our home, we did share things. It's just none of them were intimate. And so that, and that's really our kind of gauge for us is like, we approached it as like, join us in this thing that is happening that God is doing in
it
our
family. It
was
a story almost you told.
Yeah.
In a way that obviously I never knew what this person looked like. But I, there was joy that you exuded from your walk. It was really beautiful.
That's, and we wanted it to be empowering for the child too. And I think that's, you know, for us, it was, it's not intimate, and that it's ultimately, if her, you know, family or mom or whatever saw this, that they would be really excited to see it. You know, so that I think was a really good, helpful gauge.
Yes.
And a gift
well,
you gave.
Hillary, I hate to cut us off, but we're like over time. So Hillary, thank you so much for joining us. We truly appreciate it. Yeah. We appreciate this time and we've learned so much. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Vicki.
Oh, you're welcome, sweetheart.
For being with me always. Everyone, go to loveministriesbuilds.org to find out more information about Love Ministries. Connect with us on our social media at EHEW Radio and join us back here next week. I am your host, Carla Nivens. Have a wonderful week.